Hey folks, Zach Osterman here, IU Insider Indianapolis Star. This is a double dip. We did a Mind Your Banners yesterday with Tyler. We're doing a Mind Your Banners today with the estimable Galen Clavio of Crimson Cast. He's drinking from a hopscotch coffee mug, which is a lot more bougie than me. I'm just drinking from an old, I don't remember where this came from, mug. Having Galen on, obviously we're talking Indiana, we're talking NCAA tournament. We'll get into a little IU first and maybe a little Kent State at the end. But I wanted to have Galen on to really to talk about, in particular, the selection committee, the field of 68, you know, how he thought a lot of it shook out compared to how he expected it to or how he would have predicted it would, where Indiana falls in that, obviously, and just, you know, as much as we can learn year to year sort of what the committee's thought process is, what did we glean from all that? So Galen, thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be back as always. Thank you.
Let's start with Indiana. You know, I think probably and I said this on the podcast yesterday, probably a pretty a pretty sort of par performance in the Big Ten tournament. I think you can be disappointed that they didn't beat Penn State in the semifinal. On the other hand, the fact that Penn State made it all the way to the Big Ten final should maybe say something about Penn State, especially if you sort of overlay that onto how they ended the season. Ultimately, they've only lost twice since Valentine's Day. And one of those was, of course, to Purdue in the Big Ten title game. But I think you saw Indiana really flex its muscle against Maryland. You saw some good, some bad against Penn State. And more than anything else, I think you saw Indiana go up to Chicago and basically just help itself. You know, pick up a quad one win, pick up a quad one loss, don't do anything disastrous. And that probably helped them on Selection Sunday.
Yeah, I think absolutely. We keep seeing the committee, I think, take the conference tournaments a little bit more into account every year than they have in previous years. And you just didn't want to go up and either lose to a Nebraska or a Wisconsin or somebody who was outside the field, or just not, you know, not win, period. So, you know, beating Maryland should have helped. I don't think it hurt them to lose to Penn State. And ultimately, they essentially treaded water, maintained the seed that we thought that they were going to get. And even though a bunch of people, I think, thought that that loss to Penn State was going to have a bigger impact than it did, it ended up not mattering.
Sorry, I had Twitter started a video on me unexpectedly, and I needed to turn that off before I got back, before I unmuted. I mean, I do go back with Penn State, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about this in talking about the bracket. Like, you know, there was some sense that sort of Penn State was getting a lot of credit for the Big Ten tournament, and I thought that was a bit harsh. They went 5-1 in their last six in the regular season. They beat Illinois. They beat Ohio State on the road. They beat Northwestern on the road. you know what? Only three of those six were against eventual NCAA tournament teams. But then they came to Chicago and beat three tournament teams in as many days. All of them close games, tough games, by three, by two in overtime, by four against Indiana. Really even put up a fight against Purdue. I know that I didn't watch much of that game because I was driving back from Chicago, but I know they were down like 15, and then they kind of posted this furious late rally. You know, in a way, I think the other thing that really stuck out to me, Ohio State maybe accepted, it felt like the teams that we saw in the Saturday games, and maybe to some extent some of the Friday games in the Big Ten tournament, it felt like Ohio State being the exception, the three teams that are possibly playing the best basketball right now in the Big Ten, Purdue, Indiana, and Penn State, were all there on Saturday, and two of them were there on Sunday.
Yeah, well, look, Penn State probably needed at least one win in the Big Ten tournament to guarantee they were going to make it, because Penn State played a terrible non-conference schedule, and they didn't beat anybody in that non-conference schedule. I think their best win was on a neutral court against Furman. So they needed not just the wins you described, you know, beating Northwestern on the road and Ohio State on the road, but, you know, beating Illinois and saying, yes, we can beat a team that is absolutely going to be in the NCAA field was necessary. I mean, they were out of my field on March 1st, and to end up as a 10 seed is a pretty good accomplishment, considering that they probably had to leap over about 12 teams to get to that point. So it was, but I agree with you. I think they've got a lot of momentum right now. They've really got a very unique style of basketball that not many other people play right now in the NCAA, where it's all shooting and all not turning the ball over. And Yeah, I think they played really well down the stretch here, and I think they deserve to be in.
Let's talk about just generally. It felt like the bubble was a little bit clearer this year. Do you think that's fair? It felt like there were more Penn States, on the other side. Like if you reverse it in the other direction, there were more Clemsons. There were more sort of teams where it's just you, North Carolina's, where you could just sort of say either A, they clearly did what they need to do. It's hard to make an argument. There's always one or two. And I think, Rutgers was obviously the one that in our sort of sphere of influence fell on the wrong side of the bubble. But it felt to me like we talked so much about how it felt like the things had been sort of stratified nicely at like the 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe even to 5 lines. But it felt like by the time the selection show hit, a lot of even the bubble questions had been resolved, and you didn't have nearly as many sort of open-ended, what will the committee do with this team, questions left to answer when the bracket started to come out.
I agree with that. My biggest kind of discussion point internally was, what happens with North Carolina, who didn't really do anything of note all year and got left out accordingly. Nevada was kind of on my radar. That was the one team I missed in picking my bracket. Everybody missed them essentially, except for like 2 or 3 brackets that were out there. But they had a legitimate shout to get in. I mean, they had quad one wins. They had played pretty well throughout the course of the season. They had a couple of tough losses at the end. I've heard a lot and seen a lot about Rutgers, somehow getting screwed by the committee. I don't see it. I mean, they played the 342nd toughest non-conference schedule. They had a worse non-conference schedule than Penn State did.
It felt like that Minnesota game was probably the ankle weight they couldn't shed.
Yeah, I mean, you can lose the other games they lost, Indiana, Illinois, Northwestern. You'll get excuses for that. Losing at Minnesota, absolutely not. And even with that, I think they were right on the edge. They were the last team that didn't get in. And, if somehow they're able to pull that game out against Purdue on Friday, then they're probably in. That's how close the margins were. So, yeah, the other teams that were in the mix, Clemson had too many bad losses. Oklahoma State had too many losses, period. Those things do matter at the end of the day. And, I've noticed that a lot of the pundits tend to talk about teams that are left out as just these vague entities, not like, well, who would you have taken out of the field instead? There really wasn't a good candidate to leave out to put one of those teams in. And, I think the committee did a pretty okay job in terms of figuring out who the teams were, but it was also easier this year than it has been past years, I think.
Some of this probably leads into my next question, but what surprised you the most? And I mean, maybe it's some individual teams, maybe it's where a few, just a handful of different, maybe a handful of teams that wound up on a different seed line than what you expected, but what caught maybe you off guard?
Honestly, not much caught me off guard. I thought all of the seeding decisions that the committee made were justifiable. I certainly think Kansas fans have a reason to be aggrieved. It's clear that the committee looked at what happened in the Big 12 title game where Kansas gets blown out by Texas and said, well, we're moving Houston above. And then, of course, ignored Houston getting, beaten in their own conference tournament final. That, to me, there's really no justification for not having Kansas, at least as the number two overall. It's not going to really matter other than Kansas doesn't get to play a regional in their backyard, which might be fairer for everyone anyway. So perhaps all's well that ends well. Beyond that, I mean, a lot of the teams that I've seen people express surprise over being underseeded, the big one that everybody mentions is Texas Tech. Texas Tech had a really bad, early part of the year. They lost a bunch of games that they shouldn't. They didn't play particularly well. They didn't schedule very well outside of conference. So even though they're playing really good, I think their seed is pretty fair. And same thing with Florida Atlantic. A lot of people were upset that they were given a 9. I had them as an 8. A lot of people had them as a 6 or 7. They have a gaudy record. They just don't have that many big wins on their resume. So again, I think the committee did a fairly good job with that. I thought overall the committee did fine. There's always going to be people sniping about teams that they feel aggrieved about, not getting picked or getting picked lower. But we've had much more egregious issues in the past with what the committee did. And overall, if you look at the bracket consensus, it was pretty much right in line with what the committee did. And, you know, for better or for worse, that's probably a good thing because we want the committee to be a little more predictable in what they do and where they put teams.
Speaking of just kind of, I guess, the committee's process, Indiana was the third four seed. Virginia was the fourth four seed, at least in theory. Indiana should have been in line for a spot in the South Regional, which would have meant a second weekend should they have gotten there in Louisville. On the other hand, there are other bracketing principles involved, namely sort of competitive balance and not wanting to stick. You know, in that case, I think Alabama already had the number 1-3 seed and the number 3-2 seed. So, you know, giving them the fourth four seed, if you want to say, I guess probably evens that out a little bit. In terms of Indiana's path, is that kind of partly why you think they wound up where they wound up? Not first weekend. I think first weekend was basically just light distance, how close you can get a team based on what pods are already filled up. And we've talked a lot about Des Moines was going to fill up with Big 12 teams and Purdue and Marquette were going to eat up Columbus. But that second weekend site being Kansas City instead of Louisville, is that competitive balance, I guess, in your mind?
It's hard to say. I mean, if you want to get deep in the weeds on this bracketing process, like Purdue got a ridiculously easy region, and that's not sour grapes for an IU person. That's just looking at the S-curve numbers. You know, Purdue got the weakest 2 seed and the second weakest 3 seed, and, you know, good for them. But I think a lot of what the committee was trying to do was they were trying to compensate for some geographical issues they had in other areas. There were also, you know, there were a lot of really highly ranked Big 12 teams, and that made placing teams the way that you would normally place them more difficult than normal. Technically, Indiana's home region is the Midwest. It's not the South. So, you know, it's a trick of mileage this year and the fact that the regional is in Louisville, where you would look at that and say, oh, we're going to put Indiana close to home. That is probably something they wanted to avoid because they don't want Indiana to have a de facto home game against a 1 seed. And so they might have looked at that and said, well, it's an hour and a half from Bloomington to Louisville. It's, you know, what, 5-6 hours from Tuscaloosa. That would be unfair to Alabama. We'd rather just put Indiana in the Midwest. They probably would have tried to avoid that because of the Kansas rematch if Kansas had been the 1 seed in the Midwest. But since they weren't, it made it a lot easier to do so. I think that was what they were trying to do, but it's hard to say. A lot of times I feel like, you know, there's rules and procedures put out there that the committee's supposed to follow, and then they follow some of them all of the time and then don't follow some of them some of the time. And so it makes it really hard when you're doing bracketology or trying to explain what they did after the fact to really get into it and say, this is why this happened.
I just wanted to get your thoughts on just Indiana's, I guess, both their draw and where they are going into the tournament. Draw first, Kent State Friday night. If they win that game, they'll play Miami. The winner of Miami versus Drake, the 5-12 game on Sunday. Tyler and I kind of broke those teams down a little bit, but if you want just sort of the elevator speech, Kent State is very good, very tough defensively. Miami can score the ball in bunches and really can't play much defense. Drake is just kind of your standard MVC team, I think, in a lot of ways, just a couple really strong players. You know, tough, competitive. This will be their third year finishing in the KenPom Top 100. They've been to two of the last three NCAA tournaments now. So not an easy draw. On the other hand, I think some matchup opportunities that maybe Indiana wouldn't have enjoyed elsewhere. For example, as good as Kent State is defensively, their guards aren't very big. Indiana's are, at least compared to Jacobs and Carey, Kent State's two primary guard options. Just kind of your thoughts as someone who is also somewhat Miami, Miami curious as well. Just your thoughts on basically kind of this pod, I guess we'll call it the Indiana pod, they're the highest seed, basically just the path Indiana would have in theory to a second weekend.
Yeah, I'm more than Miami curious. I drank the Kool-Aid. I was down there for 2 years. So they've become my second team, so to speak. But now, look, I actually think this is a pretty favorable draw for Indiana. you know, it's funny, you get drawn against a 12 or a 13 seed, and a lot of fans and pundits immediately turn them into the 86 Celtics. I don't see it with Kent State. They're a good team, certainly, but, you know, they didn't win the MAC regular season. You know, they've lost some games that a top-level team probably wouldn't lose this year. They, you know, they're very good defensively. They're 38th in KenPom in defensive efficiency. And they're not great offensively. They really thrive on trying to create turnovers that can cause problems for Indiana, particularly with not having a backup point guard at this point and having had some issues with the press. But, you know, for fans that are worried about Kent State's defense, what I would say is this is very much a team that is comparable to, from a defensive perspective, Maryland, Illinois, Wisconsin, even Purdue. Like, those are teams in that kind of 25 to 40 range of KenPom defensively. And Indiana beat all those teams. And those teams were much better offensively from an efficiency standpoint than Kent State is. So, you know, I don't think that Kent State has a great answer for Trayce Jackson-Davis. And I think if Indiana plays to their abilities defensively and doesn't allow runs like Kent State had in that MAC championship game against Toledo, I think Indiana is going to be fine in that one. You know, of the, when you get to the Miami Drake matchup, I'd much rather play Drake, because I think, you know, again, Drake is a team that isn't that great offensively. They're good defensively. The teams Indiana's had the most trouble with so far this year are teams that are really good offensively, like Iowa, like Penn State. And unfortunately, I feel like Miami kind of falls into that category. Now, they're a little bit different in that they're a weird five seed in that their KenPom rating is 40. They haven't really been that great over the course of the season. They ran through an ACC that frankly was pretty weak overall. You know, certainly they're a team they've got some really good guards. Isaiah Wong is excellent. Nigel Pack has been really good. But they don't frighten me from a personnel perspective. And, you know, I think ultimately one of their big weaknesses is how many two-pointers they allow and how well they allow other teams to shoot. I think that's another team that Trayce Jackson-Davis could feast against. So, you know, look, you're going to have a tough matchup against whatever five seed that you're drawing, but compared to some of the other five seeds that Indiana might have drawn, including Duke, who's on a real hot streak these days, I think Miami's about as good as you could have done in terms of a matchup that Indiana could handle in that round, if that's who they end up playing.
Also, the weirdness, I guess, of a Friday 9:55 game. I'm curious how many 10 o'clock tips they had in the MAC this season.
not doing a lot of prime time in MAC country.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just like scrolling through their schedule. I'm seeing a 3:30 Saturday. I'm seeing a 7 p.m. Tuesday. You know, you do wonder, 7 p.m. Tuesday feels like they were maybe a little bit on the – seeing a lot of 7 p.m., not a lot of 9:55. I think, you know, I think your point is well taken about the profile of team Kent State is. I think there is some Rutgers in there as well. They don't have necessarily a rim protector, obviously, of the caliber of someone like Cliff Amore. But they do have length. You know, I mean, Marin Thomas is 6'8". Chris Payton actually is only 6'7". He's a reserve, but he is a Pitt transfer that I think has scored in double figures in four of his last six games and has really good rebounding percentages. A lot of it really does start with those two guards, Malik Jacobs and Sincere Carey. You know, between they each use 26.1% of possessions. Carey will see a little bit more of the ball, take a few more of the shots, but they're both just kind of big, strong guards. They're sturdy, particularly Jacobs, very good defensively. They'll pressure you without fouling. And it is, I think, you know, your point is valid that sort of, you know, opponents are turning the ball over on 22.6% of possessions against Kent State. They will gamble. You have to play slow against them, but they want to play fast against you. They will gamble to get steals, get deflections, get out in transition and hurt you. And those two guys are really a big piece of kind of basically the formula for that, for lack of a better term. On the other hand, you know, they're listed at 6'1 and 6'3. You've got multiple guards that are bigger than that, not least Jalen Hinjafino. I think your point is valid about Trayce Jackson-Davis, and that's probably going to be valid, you know, just against just about anybody Indiana plays at this point. But there's something else. I did get a chance to chat with Michael Lewis, the former, of course, Indiana point guard, who's now the head coach at Ball State. And Ball State went 1-1 against Kent State this year. They lost, I think, at home, and then they beat them up at the Memorial Athletic and Convocation Center in Kent. And he said one of the things that, you know, one of the first things he said was they won't be intimidated, that they're not going to be bothered by the Indiana on the chest, I think was pretty much his exact phrasing. They lost by 2 at Charleston, by 5 at Houston, by 7 at Gonzaga. They're going to make Indiana work for it, essentially, is sort of what I guess I'm trying to say. But on the other hand, if Indiana, you know, does kind of show up in the right frame of mind, and that's always part of this in the NCAA tournament, of course, but if Indiana does show up in the right frame of mind, then I think Indiana is going to have a fair few matchup advantages. It's interesting you say you want to see Drake on the other side, and I recognize that at some level, it really doesn't matter. We're talking about NCAA tournament teams. So, you know, it is what it is. But there are some things, Drake. I mean, listen, Miami can score in bunches. On the other hand, Miami is awful defensively, like so bad defensively. They don't turn teams over. They don't stop twos. If you dig into their conference only numbers, they're not even that, you know, they're still, I mean, they're worse, frankly, against high major teams. This is a team that gave up 88 to Maryland on a neutral floor in November, gave up 105 at home to Cornell in December, gave up 76 in a loss at Georgia Tech in January, gave up 85 in a home win over Louisville, and a home loss to Florida State at home, or excuse me, in February. My point is, Miami doesn't stop people. And I think that it's in all likelihood they are going to be down, or at least be playing with a very limited Norchad Amir, who is their best rebounder by some distance, and probably their best answer to Trayce Jackson-Davis. Amir suffered a sprained ankle or some kind of ankle injury in the ACC tournament. I just, when I look at Drake, I just see the sort of team that it's not. I see the profile of a team that can make a second weekend run. They do not allow offensive rebounds. They do not turn the ball over. They make a decent chunk of their threes. They're actually better in conference play than overall in three-point shooting percentage. They've got the MVC player of the year in Tucker DeVries, who's a very versatile player. He took 221 threes and 233 twos this year. He's a decent rebounder. They'll play through him a lot, and they've got some good pieces around him. They're just the sort of team that does, on paper anyway, it feels like they don't make a ton of mistakes. They don't beat themselves. They make you beat them. And they've got a couple of really good players. And that, to me, is always just kind of a sign of a team that could be really tough to get out of the NCAA tournament.
It's entirely possible. I mean, the one thing I'll say is last year's Miami team had a similarly low profile, had a similarly bad defensive profile, and made it all the way to the Elite Eight. And so that's a team that's, they've got some history in the tournament. They know how to approach the tournament. You know, so I think ultimately my concern there is, you know, Jim Larrañaga has proven himself to be, you know, kind of outside the central coaching circle of people that are automatically listed as the best coaches in the country, but he really does seem to understand how to coach his team come tournament time. You know, going all the way back to taking George Mason to the Final Four in 2006. Drake hasn't been there, you know, at least not in the last couple of years. And I'm less concerned about IU matching up against a team that can't out-athlete them like Miami might be able to. And I just look at the profiles of the teams that IU's had the most trouble with this year, and they very much remind me of that Miami team. I mean, Penn State's got a very similar profile. Iowa's got Miami's profile on steroids going both directions. They're better on offense and worse on defense. And they went 0-4 against those two teams in the Big Ten. So, look, I think either way, it's going to be a tough matchup. I would have a little more confidence going up against Drake versus Miami. But I think Indiana can beat both of those teams. As you said, it really comes back to, does Indiana bring their A game? Can they play with some joy? You know, can they go in without the weight of the world on their shoulders? That's what's weighed this team down, it seems like, quite a bit at times, is the pressure. And I guess what worries me about a team that scores a lot or can hit a lot of shots is that the moment that those start to fall, we've seen Indiana's offense fall apart on the other end because they seem to thrive a lot on having success on defense and then carrying that over to the offensive end. When that breaks down, IU has some problems.
That's fair. My issue with Miami is basically just their defense. I mean, they're really, it's hard to underscore how bad they are defensively. Like there's, it's not like there's just one. I mean, they don't, they're okay against the three, but that's not really a fact. And that's something like Kent State's profile is really sort of robust because they are really good against threes and they force turnovers and they don't allow a bunch of offensive rebounds. But Indiana doesn't really, the turnovers are always going to be their own thing. The other two things, Indiana doesn't need a ton of offensive rebounds to succeed and certainly shouldn't need to make a lot of threes to succeed. We can have a separate conversation about whether Indiana should be taking more threes. The reality is that their profile for success has not relied on threes all year. Where Miami struggles is turning opponents over, keeping opponents off the offensive glass. They don't foul a lot, but that's again, like Indiana can kind of live without that. They are really bad around the rim. They don't have any size. And it's not like, you think about that and we use Indiana as a frame of reference because that's the team that we both think the most about. But, they're not even a team that profiles similarly to like 2016 Indiana, where the defensive numbers are kind of meh. And it's because they were really bad for the first two and a half months of the season. And then they got better as the time went on. Florida State scored 85 on them 2 weeks ago at home. And that's a bad Florida State team. Louisville scored 85 on them a month ago at home. That's an awful Louisville. Like that Louisville team might genuinely be the worst high major team of the KenPom era. They won what, four games? And they put up 85 points.
And I'm with you on all that.
83, and it just it's. I just don't trust teams as important as I think you said the last time we talked, and I agree with you that like the ability to score the ball is more important at this time of year than the ability to defend the ball. I would rather have scorers, but I can't trust a team that just can't get any stops. I can't trust a team that basically just needs to win shootouts every single night, because suddenly you're in a cold gym, you don't know it well, you're on the road, you have a short turnaround, here comes this All-American big, it's not quite as short a turnaround, but like here's Drake, which again doesn't make a lot of mistakes. You have better athletes, but they've got a really good player they can play through and they do not hurt themselves. How do you handle it when suddenly they're not giving you gifts? I'm skeptical of Miami. Not Jim Larrañaga.
Sure.
This profile.
The thing that all those things you said, I agree with. The problem is the last time Indiana scored 80 or more points was the 28th of January. And if you look at the elite offensive teams Indiana's played, they've gotten shredded defensively. Arizona shredded them. Iowa shredded them. Penn State again. Iowa again. Michigan State, not that elite, but they scored a lot of points on them. And Indiana's issue, from my perspective, has been when they get into those types of games, they haven't been able to score enough to keep up with the team that knows how to score. I actually think Drake's going to upset Miami. That's a game that I wouldn't be shocked at all. I think Miami, this is like the wrong moment matchup for them, given everything that you just said. But and I would still, however, given Indiana's profile, try to avoid a team that is nuclear on offense, if at all possible.
Any other thoughts? I guess we'll wrap it up here. But just, we have talked so much about this team, and that's the nature of this thing, and this team in particular, obviously having its expectations sort of climb so high at different points in the season. I think there is I'm not predicting they'll get to the Sweet 16. I think there is a reasonable path to the second weekend. I'm not absolutely sort of guaranteeing it, but I do think it's possible. And then obviously you're going to get a very, very, very tough Houston team. I think the one question about Houston will basically just be, where is Marcus Sasser by that point? And maybe Houston really did just kind of sit him down thinking we don't care about the AAC title game. I am a little skeptical of he wasn't ready for the American Athletic Conference title game, but he will be fine for the NCAA tournament. Yeah. But I do think there is a reasonable path to the second weekend for Indiana here if they navigate the way they need to in Albany.
I agree with all of that. I think Indiana's biggest hurdle is going to be the first game. They have to come out with some confidence. They have to come out and have some fun. And they have to realize that Kent State is a legitimate opponent, you know, not as strong as one they might have faced otherwise, but still a very legitimate opponent who absolutely can beat them. Look, if they can get past that game and they can beat whoever they play in the second round, I actually kind of like the matchup with Houston. There'd be no pressure on IU. They would be playing a very athletic team, but not a team that scores in bunches most of the time. And a team that, frankly, hasn't played a high-caliber opponent since the 10th of December. You know, the highest-level team that Houston's played since early December is – well, I guess they did play Virginia on the 17th, so I'll give them that. But Memphis is the only other team out of their conference that made the NCAA tournament. Houston's battle-tested. They would be the favorite in that game. I would probably pick them to win against Indiana. But Indiana can go into a game like that with no pressure, knowing that they will have achieved what in almost every fan's eyes would be a successful season. This is where I'm really fascinated because, you know, what we heard out of Trace Jackson Davis in the post game from Penn State, for my opinion, is a guy who is desperate to carve out a legacy for himself that's something other than statistical in the IU record books. You know, he to me, I think, is looking at this opportunity as something that could help to cement him as one of the IU all-time greats, not just in terms of the points he scored or the rebounds he grabbed, but the fact that he took Indiana to a regional. It's really up to his teammates at this point to help make that happen. And that's where things are going to be won or lost. And I think that we've seen some promising signs in certain areas. Malik Renew has played pretty well the last few games. Tamar Bates has come on in the last couple of games. You know, IU's got to have those guys step up. They've got to get better contributions out of some of their other starters and more consistency out of their starters, particularly offensively. The path is there. And, you know, if Indiana can get through these next two games, if they can play hard, if they can understand that the Kent State game might be a dogfight, and that's not a reflection on their, you know, them being good or bad, IU as a team, but, you know, it's a 4-point game right now in Vegas. That's probably what it'll end up with. That's a tight margin. But if you can, regardless of how many points you beat Kent State by, beating them and then figuring out a way against whoever you're matched up against next, now I think a lot of pressure goes off Indiana, and then I think the dynamic changes. You know, so getting this first game under their belt, getting past it, it's kind of like what happened with Wyoming last year, but hopefully without the complete letdown that happened in the game immediately after. And there were a lot of reasons for that, obviously, with the travel and whatnot. But I just think this Indiana team, they're primed. I'm a little worried about where they're at mentally and emotionally right now, but they've gotten plenty of rest. They'll have played three games in 16 days leading up to the start of this game, and they'll be the late game, so they'll get another extra day of rest on top of that. Everything's set up for them to achieve. Now they just need to get themselves in the right frame of mind to do so.
Lost the mute button. We'll leave it there. This has been Mind Your Banners, a Mind Your Banners double dip special. We'll find something much better to call, or maybe we just won't do two podcasts in a week. It's always easier to do it that way. We may have something out of Tyler and I will both be in Albany, so we may have something out of Albany either before or certainly if Indiana wins against Kent State after Indiana's game on Friday. But for now, for the Star, for the Herald Times, thank you so much, Galen Clavio, for joining us. This has been Mind Your Banners for March 14th, 2023. Thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you soon.